It has been said that life on this planet is only possible because of the presence of 6 inches of topsoil and water. Water is ubiquitous. It is everywhere. We use it for everything from holy rituals to saving lives to washing our socks. Our water ceremony today was created by Unitarian Universalist women in the 1980s as part of a retreat workshop gathering of women who came from a variety of different places. The lay leader who created the event, Lucille Shuck Longview, along with Reverend Carolyn McDade, asked some of the women to bring water with them when they came. And at that event, at the ritual, the women stood in a semicircle around an earthen bowl. And as each woman poured the water into the common bowl, she shared the significance of that water. Some came from the ocean, others were collected rainwater, some from the streams fed by melting glaciers. The seventh principle, the one that calls us to affirm and promote respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part, came to life in a very real way as the waters mingled and formed an ever larger whole. Today, many of our congregations use this ritual at our annual ingathering services, as we did this morning. Water is the essence of life. It is holy and precious and powerful. In high school, I remember we learned about the six simple machines. Who can name them? Lever and fulcrum, wedge, screw, that's the one that always gets me, pulley, lever, yep, lever and fulcrum, inclined plane, is it dopey or dock? Axle and wheel. Fulcrum, lever and fulcrum, wheel and axle, pulley, inclined plane, wedge, and screw. A simple machine is described by Wikipedia as a mechanical device that changes the direction or magnitude of a force. The six tools we just named were defined by scientists in the Renaissance, and the list has not needed to be updated since. Certainly, we have more and better tools now than we did then, but none that simple. Now, to that list, I would add water. Well, water and gravity. In all three of its naturally occurring states and in the liminal spaces between, water is a tool. As liquid, water weighs around 8 pounds per gallon. The force of a wave can knock over a person or a building, and the weight of water through the water wheels first allowed people to grind grain in simple grist mills, and later turned massive turbines to power factories and cities and more. The river that flows past this town is a thoroughfare, a slow-speed highway that carries freight and fish and mud from far upstream in Minnesota all the way to the Gulf of Mexico. Along the way, it has been dammed and docked and locked to do the work of humans. But the river is its own master. And when the rains come and it is well fed, it surges to its full strength and reminds us again of the power of water. As a solid ice and glaciers has scraped and shaped the landscape of North America, moving topsoil from mountains onto plains and placing boulders in ridiculous places and high mountain meadows. Ice can lift mountains and support massive vehicles if it's thick enough, and a simple icicle can be deadly when it falls from a height. When water freezes, it expands, which makes it like a wedge. Ice can split apart rocks if you've got enough time. It widens each year the cracks in sidewalks and highways. It can burst the container that holds it, And when it gets into the ground and freezes, it can shift roads and culverts and house foundations. As vapor, water can power all manner of things, from factories and trains to the whistle in your teapot. Clouds deliver water in liquid form, of course, and sometimes as frozen flakes, but driving wind before them. Water can be used to weigh down an object, but enough of it can float a ship the size of a skyscraper. Balance, of course, is the key. Not enough water means plants and animals cannot survive. Too much water can damage crops and buildings and whole cities. When water is clean, it is a grand and glorious thing. But when it is polluted, it becomes worse than useless. It becomes a danger to life instead of a giver of life. Water has been in the news a lot these past few weeks. Water protectors at the Standing Rock Reservation in North Dakota are putting their bodies on the line to try and stop an oil pipeline from crossing the Missouri River just a mile upstream from their community and ancient sacred burial grounds. A sinkhole at a Florida fertilizer plant leaked 215 million gallons of radioactive water into the aquifer there 3 weeks ago. Last week, a 250,000 gallons of gasoline was spilled in rural Alabama. A pipeline owned by Shell ruptured in Texas last week, spilling oil into a bayou. In Canada, 400 barrels of oil were spilled when a train derailed in northern Ontario. In a proverb attributed to a variety of different First Nations people, we are warned only when the last tree has died, the last fish has been caught, and the last river has been poisoned, will we realize we cannot eat money. This week, this month, it has all seemed so much more immediate. In the science fiction novel Dune, Frank Herbert describes a desert world in which the natives, freemen, have developed ways to maximize every drop of water, both in their bodies and from the world around them. In a desert planet where rain never falls, the freemen are an occupied people, planning and saving over the course of generations, stockpiling water in vast underground caverns, planning for the eventual day when they were able to claim their planet as their own and use their water to plant crops and grow food. In the book, the story's protagonist is taken in by the freemen in one of the starkest scenes in the book. They show him their underground reservoir. Our water is your water, they tell him. And he sees millions of gallons of water, kept so carefully, saved only through the collected efforts of the entire population, by a cultural unity and will to preserve their future survival to the point where they risk daily dehydration in order to conserve that water. It is not dissimilar. That story is not dissimilar to the more real and more recent instance in the last century when scientists starved to death guarding heirloom seeds that are being saved for use after a catastrophic disaster. Our fragile planet is in a dangerous spiral toward environmental failure. We are fools if we do not recognize this. Our oceans are warming, seabirds are dying from the pollution we dump in the seas, and our privileged way of life is about to become profoundly cramped. We are about to learn here in America what much of the rest of the world already knows, that clean water is more rare and precious than we think. That using potable water to flush our toilets is obscenely wasteful, and that we are more interconnected and interdependent than our American exceptionalism would presently permit us to consider. Water is precious and it is holy, and it is a thing that we share. It binds us, it makes us live. Our bodies are mostly made of water and carbon. We are, as the joke goes, essentially cucumbers with anxiety. The air we breathe is laden with moisture that soothes our lungs. The water we drink is made of hydrogen and oxygen atoms that have been on this planet since the Big Bang. They have been breathed in and exhaled, consumed and released by countless creatures through the ages. Carl Sagan tells us that we are made of star stuff, and it's true. The elements that make up our planet have been here always. They cannot be created or destroyed. They can be combined and separated, but the bits remain the same. We are made of the same hydrocarbons that made the dinosaurs and Caesar, King George and Jesus and Buddha and the lowest grasses on the plains. This, we are all connected. We are bound by this thing called water, this beautiful, magical, fragile compound of two gases. I want to challenge you this week to be aware of your water. Yes, your water. The water you drink, the water you let run down the drain while you brush your teeth or do dishes, the water you use to wash your laundry and to cook. Notice how much water is simply poured out, either down the drain or on the ground. We are dependent upon water. We are interdependent with the other beings on our small blue planet. I would challenge us to remember the water that we've shared here and treasure the water in our homes in the same way we treasure the spiritual connection of this religious community. I pray that we as people begin to act as though we grasp the gravity of our vulnerability. That is my prayer. May it be so.